Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world willing to admit that I did not watch a whole lot of baseball last night. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, but we're going to talk about it anyway. Sorry, Jordan, I went to a Broadway show trying to expand my cultural field.
That's awesome. That's honestly one of the better excuses for not watching a loaded Tuesday slate of ball that I've heard from either of us, I think, at any point. But the good news for this baseball podcast is that I did watch a lot of the ball, which at least makes us pretty qualified. That means we're hitting 500, which in baseball terms is just absurd. So I think we are more than ready to do this podcast. We are going to hit some of our favorite moments from last night. Talk about the Kike Hernandez trade, which is a way bit looks a lot flashier on the surface than it probably actually is. We're going to leave with that. Talk about the Dodgers and Red Sox in general. Hit some of our favorite moments from Tuesday. And then hopefully we will do some emails. We've been getting a lot of good emails. I know we've been teasing them recently. We're going to hit those on the back half of the show, as well as some other fun topics. Jake, the trade deadline is less than a week away. Did you see Bob Nightingale's tweet last night? Another classic of which he is only capable. The syntax of Bob is truly unmatched.
His feel yesterday for the English language is so poor that it is that elite.
It's actually a higher plane of intelligence.
It's like Bob, if you don't sleep for 3 days straight, you start having visions of the truth.
Yes. And that's the truth shall set you free. And that is what Bob tweeted yesterday, a little after 6 p.m. On Tuesday. He tweeted, "The moment of truth will be here," in capital I for some reason, "exactly 1 week. All of the trades will be officially finalized, and all of the trade rumors will be mercifully put to rest."
Mercifully. If the trade rumors are struggling in pain, like a dog with cancer. Yeah. We're going to send all of the trade rumors upstate.
Here's the thing about that, too. First of all, so true, Bob. Second of all,
yas, Bob.
Some of the Ohtani stuff gets a little tiring, but like it's understandable. But like in season trades like this, like I'm not tired of it. Like because in the off season, it sucks because we don't have anything else. And so we're clinging to nothingness. And it's just like, this is not interesting and not information. And we're desperate for any sort of information. We have amazing baseball on every day. So like, if you want to sprinkle in some goofy trade rumors headlines, that's fine with me. I know all the actual moves are going to get pushed until the last, you know, few days, and that's great.
Like, but we get to watch ball at night.
Is unnecessary.
There's ball at night.
Yes,
exactly.
We're good. Anyway, all of that is to say, we did get a trade yesterday, Jake Mintz, and I do believe you saw it before you went into your Broadway show, and that is the Boston. Oh no, you didn't.
No, I saw it. I was just saying, you know, you got to turn your phone off in there.
Oh, that's true.
You got to turn your phone off in there. My fiance, her phone went off in the show. And it was such a bad luck, man.
Doesn't that like void your engagement because it's so embarrassing?
I know. It's an automatic -2 war.
Oh, man. That's just a killer. What? She's got her phone. Who our age has their phone with sound on at this point? I thought we were all on vibrate and silent. All right. Anyway, sorry. We don't have to cancel her too hard. Okay, anyway. The Red Sox traded Kike Hernandez to the Dodgers, for two AAA relievers. Now, if you're getting AAA relievers from basically any other team besides maybe Tampa, you're like, who cares? But the good news is that every single pitcher in the Dodgers minor league system has impressive numbers. So Nick Robertson and Justin Hagemann will probably help the Boston Red Sox at some point this season. But let's talk about Kike Hernandez, because the headline of Kike back to the Dodgers, if you haven't really been paying that much attention to him recently, it's like, whoa, oh boy, big move. And then you look and you say, oh, what? Then it's kind of weirder. So where do you want to go with this?
Well, it's a great way to know who's paying attention to Kike Hernandez and the Red Sox this year. Because if you see any tweets about how this is a huge deal, that person has not watched a Kike Hernandez at bat, because Kike freaking stinks. He has not. Do you remember everyone in 2021 when he was the greatest player in the world for 3 weeks in October? And we were like, oh, my God, is this the new Kike Hernandez? He used up all of his bickies, all of his matches, all of his bullets that week, because since then he has been downright horrendous.
Yeah. And this year, the added element, it's one thing, you know, last year he struggled offensively, but was still providing some interesting defensive versatility and was pretty solid in the outfield. But with this year, with Trevor Story out to start the season, they were like, oh, we'll just do Kike at shortstop. That was a disaster. And now that hurts even worse when his offense is even worse than it was last year somehow. OPS of 599 at the time of the trade here. But the reason the Red Sox are doing this is because they don't need him anymore. Trevor Story is going to be back soon. And his playing time was already cut short because he's been hitting so poorly. And they're like, listen, if we can find a place for you and we can get anything of use at this point. I know he's going to be a free agent at the end of this year. But to me, good job on them for getting him, because for getting anything for him, especially relievers that can probably help them. Now, I'm more interested from the Dodgers side, because we're saying, okay, he's been shitty. Well, then what do the Dodgers see in him, right? Well, the Dodgers, who are playing quite well recently, have also had a bit of a hole at this part of their roster, thanks to the offensive ineptitude of Miguel Rojas. And it seems like they think, well, there's no way he could possibly be any worse. Let's bring him back to where he was once extra comfortable. Maybe we can tap into some sort of, you know, league average offense and defensive versatility and depth, which do I totally buy into that? Because the Dodgers sort of, can afford it, the pitching, although also, like, I feel like they could also use Nick Robertson this year. So it's a little strange, but I don't really see it as much for them. For me, for Boston, makes sense clearing the way. Trevor Story is going to be back soon, but where do you see it from the Dodgers side?
If you go to Fangraphs and you sort by WAR the other way, you'll see that Kike is at the top. He has been the worst position player in baseball. Negative 1.4 wins above replacement this year on Fangraphs.
Here's the other thing about him. And Mike Petriello pointed this out yesterday. Okay, so you say, oh, well, normally when you are this bad, you are probably getting pretty unlucky, right? At least to some degree. And yet, Kike Hernandez, like, his BABIP is low, is about average. It's a little below average, but he has the lowest ex-WOBA based on quality of contact in the league. So it's not just that he's getting the worst results, it's that the expected results are the worst as well. And so there's a lot to overhaul here, right? It's not just, so can the Dodgers do that? Whatever. Are they going to be fully relying on him? No. Will they, if they fix it to some degree, will I be surprised? Of course not. But I still like this move for Boston, for sure. And I think the most important part is, the other thing is, there might be people who maybe not paying attention, like, oh my God, they're trading Kike, they're selling. Like, no, it's quite the opposite, I would say, because they're clearing way for Trevor Story. It's a piece, a bit of business they can put behind them and focus on probably adding more pitching in the coming days. So I like this move, and I think Trevor Story coming back is a big deal. And I think for Boston, like, if there's one thing we're going to talk about their latest and greatest lowlight, you know, from last night in a second, even though they won. But, like, this lineup's pretty good, man.
It,
like,
is,
this,
man.
This lineup is, I am, especially with the way that Cassis has been swinging it. Obviously, Yoshida's been awesome. We talked about Duran kind of breaking out. But if Trevor Story can come back and be even pretty good, I really like this lineup a lot. And I don't know if it's good enough to get into the postseason, and there's still a lot of questions on the pitching side. But I'm impressed with the offense at the very least at this point.
Only the Oakland Athletics, a team designed to lose, have gotten less production from the shortstop position than the Red Sox. So when you take a look at their lineup, that is the enormous gaping hole. And now that they have Trevor Story coming back, that hole is filled. Is it fair to expect Trevor Story to immediately be outstanding for them? Probably not. But is it fair to assume he'll be a league average player? A league average shortstop? Absolutely. I mean, remember, Trevor Story a couple years ago was a motherfucker. This guy got $100 million in the free agent market for a reason. And I think the longer we go into the season, the better I feel about the Red Sox over the Yankees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the next week is going to determine that for a lot of reasons. But I agree with you. I think that it's so funny how terrible we felt about Boston in so many respects outside of the Devers extension before the year, because remember how late the story news kind of came out?
Yeah.
And everyone was making fun of them for Yoshida, but like now it's like, I mean, obviously Yoshida's more than proven them right, but with Story coming back at this stage, like, it's all kind of coming into place. Again, I look at this pitching staff, I'm like, how the hell are we getting through the last few couple of months? So they're going to have to do something about that. But that's kind of where I'm at with them. Now, the Dodgers on the other side are, while Kike, I don't think it's going to be that important for them, although who knows with them, you never know what they're going to be able to get from a guy and who looks like he sucks. They've obviously proven that more than once. But the Dodgers are playing quite well. And late last night, this was the one game I did not stay up for, but they came back in dramatic fashion against the Blue Jays. I mean, they've literally done this 1,000 times. Like, this is a team that has done this so many times to so many good teams and bad teams over the last decade. It had every, you know, possible element of a great Dodgers comeback. And, you know, their pitching has put them in more positions to actually have to do that recently than ever, which is maybe not a good thing. But here they are. Now they have, you know, actually sort of opened up a bit of a lead at top of the NL West, right when we thought they'd be being challenged, as the Giants and D-backs have sort of fallen back. And they are looking good. There's still a ton of questions with them as well. But they are playing quite well. I've been very impressed with them.
Jason Hayward is still going. Okay. There are some storylines that hop out of spring training that don't last, that are flukes, but they stick in our minds because they happen at the beginning of the season, right? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of it. Like Brian LaHare a couple years ago. Even like Brent Rooker this year, right? Brent Rooker since the end of April has been fine. Mm-hmm. But because he was electric for the first 3 weeks of the year, we remember it. Jason Hayward was that. But he has kept this up. James Outman, right, is an example. James Outman was incredible for the first month. He's been fine. Hayward has maintained his level of play after 4 years of being straight up bad in Chicago. The Dodgers, whatever the hell they're doing, is amazing. Again, this is an old lineup. Mookie is 30. Freddie is 33. Muncy is 32. JD Martinez, 35, almost 36. Peralta, same thing. Hayward is 34. Miguel Rojas, 34. Kike coming in, he's almost 32. Austin Barnes is 33. Chris Taylor, 32. Like, this is an old group. I know that the narrative around this team to enter the season was them letting some of the younger players take the reins. That hasn't really stuck beyond Outman. But it doesn't matter because the Dodgers are spectacular anyway.
The Dodgers also, as our good friend and Fox Sports colleague Rowan Kavner pointed out, he had a good tweet last night, which is basically, you know, if you had told him Dustin May out for the year in May. Wow, that was back. I feel like that just happened. Clayton Kershaw would miss a month. Urias would have like a 5 ERA and miss time. Dodgers starters ERA is approaching 5. The bullpen ERA is over 4. By far the worst it's been during this run. We probably would not expect them to be 58 and 42, which is where they are. But it is because of that lineup. It is because Freddie Freeman is so good. Oh my God, he is so good. And like, I know we've kind of had him and Goldschmidt on the same level for the last 10 years. And I think that that's generally been fair. But I have not seen Freddie be bad ever. Like, I can't even picture. He is so automatic in a way that I cannot really think of almost any other player in the sport that, yes, there's reasons why, like, he's clearly not the flashiest and it's not the most aesthetically exciting, and there's things with Freddie where it's like you kind of roll your eyes, but holy shit, he's so good. And now he has them all doing the goofy dance that he was doing at the charity gala a few weeks ago, and it's the classic perfect thing that the baseball players like to rally around, and it's all very funny. But Freddie's amazing, and I think honestly, like, I not that it, you know, there was like, how would he fit in? Like, he's clearly fit in now. They love him now, and it's going great.
This is the point I want to make, right? When Freddie shows up to LA, he's an awkward dude at first, right? He's a little sticky socially. And so it was a difficult transition. The bottom line is, no matter where you are, no matter who you are, if you rake, eventually the team will come around to you and they will make you feel comfortable. And that is what has happened with Freddie Freeman, is that, what are you going to do? have a team culture that doesn't welcome the guy with an OPS over 1,000? No. So yeah. I'm not surprised that he has felt more at home in LA, because since joining the Dodgers, he has been, I mean, I'm looking at his numbers. He's a 158 OPS plus.
I just want to say, I think we are heading for a very interesting Ronald versus Freddie MVP discussion. I think that is going to bubble up in the coming months. Obviously, I would still vote for Ronald at this point, and he is potentially heading for a historic season, whereas Freddie is heading for a very normal, awesome season. And I know he's also on the same team as Mookie Betts, but like, I just think Freddie's been, if the Dodgers end up pulling away and just like steamrolling this division in a way that people didn't think that they would, and it's because Freddie's one of the best hitters in the league and the pitch, unlike, you know, that's not about the pitching, I really think we're going to start having those conversations. Not that Ronald's been bad. I mean, Ronald's been amazing, but he's cooled off at least a little bit, and it will be interesting. That will be a conversation that is going to happen.
I agree with you. The reason it won't happen this season with the new rule changes is the season of the steal. And so as a result, Ronald finishing with 70 steals is going to be too thick, sweet, and compelling of a narrative for people to vote against it.
Yeah. Probably. Again, this would take Ronald like really cooling off in a way that Freddie won't. Like, that's the thing, is that I know that Freddie is not going to have a bad month the way that even Ronald is capable of doing so.
Acuna right now has 50 walks and 55 strikeouts.
I know.
Ronald Acuna, the guy who a couple years ago was swinging at everything in the world. He has just... Like, Freddie Freeman, if you think of Freddie Freeman and Ronald Acuna, like, next to each other, right? You're like, oh, Freddie is the guy who has great swing decisions and doesn't strike out, and Ronald Acuna is this free swinger. That is not the case, okay?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Freddie has 81 strikeouts and 50 walks, which is, like, pretty solid for a power hitter in today's game. Ronald is just on a different level.
Yeah. No, that's totally true. It's again, I'm not, this is not against Ronald. I'm just saying that like that we eventually, as these MVP discussions go on, we look for other ones to start making a discussion, and it is the easiest guy to bring up against Ronald for all of their history in general. All right, Jake, as you mentioned,
you want to take a break?
Didn't watch that much. You didn't watch a lot of ball last night.
Let's take a break.
Oh, let's take a break. All right. All right. We are going to take a quick break.
Let's take a break.
And when we return, we'll hit some of the other fun moments from Tuesday night's action and some emails and all kinds of more fun.
This is former PGA Tour winner Smiley Kaufman, host of The Smiley Show, a SiriusXM podcast. You want to know what I love about golf? I get to talk to some really cool people. I get to walk the fairways of the best courses in the world with the best players in the world. And I get to share it with you every single week. Listen to The Smiley Show right now on Stitcher, Pandora, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's Smiley, S-M-Y-L-I-E.
And we are back here on Baseball Barbacast, a baseball podcast that I host. I'm Jake Mintz, and that's Jordan Schusterman. Last night, as I mentioned before, I did not get the chance to watch a whole lot of baseball. I went to a Broadway show. I got stuck on the 2 train. I cleaned my apartment. You know, not every night is a night to sit down and inhale our favorite sport. Even heroes like us need breaks. Thankfully, there's two of us. And so Jordan was able to watch all the ball his heart could take. And he is going to update me on what went on last night. We're not going to lie to you folks. You know, we don't watch every minute of every game. And sometimes we need to be updated just like you all.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was a lot. There was so much that happened last night. But we're gonna zero in on a few specific moments. So things, I'm just going to tell you, things we're not going to talk about, but we are going to acknowledge. Mariners, historic comeback, season saver. We love to see it. Julio, 2 homers. The Mets beating the Yankees in the Subway Series in the most predictable way possible, which is Verlander being awesome, Herman getting smashed by Pete Alonso. And again, I'm sure the Yankees will win today. Oh, I have to mention this too. Carlos Rodon on the mound today against the Mets. Yeah, he might get booed before he even throws a pitch. I hope not. But we need Carlos to throw a nice little outing today. I would very much like that for him, for everybody involved. And because again, it's funnier when the Subway Series is split and no one's happy.
Carlos, in his fourth start as a Yankee, it's already a must win.
Yeah, correct. I mean, that's how it felt against the Angels last week, and we know how that went. So I hope he can perform better in front of the home crowd. The Reds hanging on against the Brewers barely. That got a little dicey late. Christian Yelich has been unbelievable, but the Reds finally beat them. Astros hung on against Texas. Giants snapped their losing streak. The Marlins keep losing. The Cubs, White Sox keep losing. Cubs are on a W4, ? But four moments from last night that we have to talk about. First, Boston. Jake, we just talked about them. The Red Sox actually beat the Braves last night in an important win, moving to, I believe I saw, 20-4 all time in the City Connect uniforms. Holy shit. All right, it's worth it for whatever crazy colors you're wearing. Good work, Boston. But the Red Sox have had some plays this year on both sides of the ball that you truly cannot even, you couldn't dream them up. There's just mistakes. These are not normal errors. This is not Bill Buckner, right? That is a very basic mistake in a high leverage spot, sure. But that is an error that we see happen on ball fields across this great land all the time. The mistakes that the Red Sox are coming up with now, I can't even fathom. And last night, you may have seen on your timeline highlight or the captions, Braves turn triple play.
Mm-mm.
But Jake, is that really what happened here? Because I would say that the Red Sox turned a triple play on themselves. What happened last night when Tristan Cassis strolled to the plate with runners on first and second and nobody out? You did see this play. I'm not throwing you in blind.
No, I did see this play. Here we go. I'm just going to... Here, I'll do a little commentary. The 1-0 from Morton to Cassis. Cassis swings, flies one out to right. Harris is under it, and the runner on first is running towards second, doesn't see it. The throw to first, he's doubled off. A throw to third, it's a triple play. Basically, what happens here, the runner on first on the fly ball just...
Duvall.
I think it's Adam Duvall.
Yep.
Just runs to second. When the ball's in the air, there's nobody out because he thinks it's going to get down. Harris doubles him off. That's two outs. And Yoshida, when the throw goes to first, runs to third. And then he gets thrown out, triple play. This is not the Braves doing good. I think there's a decent chance that me and Jordan and seven other attendees of your upcoming wedding could turn this triple play against the Red Sox.
Yes, they did make it about as easy as possible. I will say, I mean, give a little credit for Harris making that throw on the run as well and accurately as he did, and then Olsen. But Yoshida thinking he can get to third after tagging up as late as he did is the part here that is just beyond comprehension, because it was already a disaster for Duvall. But wow, what an absolute masterclass mess. And this is after last week they had the second play of the season where a ball was thrown into center field by the catcher and had Jaron Duran, the second Little League home run allowed of the season. It's just so crazy. And they cut to Cora, and it's like Cora of all people, you think of him as this, like, this, you know, master tactician, and none of that shit matters if your team forgets the rules. So yeah.
It looks like an MLB The Show novice, someone who doesn't know the base running controls.
That is bingo. That is the best way to put it. Let's go across the country to San Diego. Jake?
Great spot.
Where the Pirates and the Padres are squaring off at Petco Park this week. And the Pirates taking game one of that series because the Padres are the Padres. And that means that we knew the Padres would win on Tuesday night. That's just how the Padres season has been going. And indeed, they won a close one. But Juan Soto hit an absolute monstrous home run late in this game to give the Padres a 3-1 lead. Off lefty Angel Perdomo. Angel Perdomo, a gigantic left-hander in the Pirates bullpen who throws very hard but isn't very good.
But in this situation, Angel was not an angel. No. Because the next batter, Manny Machado, plunked him in the shoulder. Yeah. You never want to assume as a pro that guys are hitting other guys on purpose, but this one smells very fishy.
Yeah. This one was also one where it almost looked like it's classic. You know, if you're going to tell some random dude to throw at someone, it's probably going to be Angel Perdomo. And the Pirates have done this before. Like, this is a very Shelton kind of move, whatever. Did Soto pimp it? Who cares? But the thing I want to talk about, I mean, we've had these discussions 50 times in this podcast, but I will say that Manny Machado's quotes after the game, and most notably his reaction in real time, because Perdomo hits him with 98 on the elbow or shoulder, whatever, back. Not fun. Not a pleasant time. And Machado walks oh so slowly to first base, and you can see the calculations in his head. So many thoughts going on where he's thinking, well, the obvious thing is, I can't get thrown out of this game. I can't get ejected. Our season is already on, you know, life support, right? That's the first thing he's thinking, obviously. The second thing he's probably also thinking is, the Padres could use a fight right now. Is it worth it to spark our season and, you know, get ejected and get riled up? Now, they were winning this game, so I feel like it's less so than if you're losing and maybe that's you rally, whatever. But maybe there was some of that. And then, but what we've got after the game is Machado kind of admitting what was going through his head, which is basically like, wow, really? This is how we're handling this? This isn't very mature. And I loved the self-awareness that Machado exhibited after the game. He had a great. So he said, I guess people don't respect people anymore. 300 pumps in the show, 10 years plus, but it is what it is. So is he inferring like, I'm awesome, I'm going to be a Hall of Famer, why are you hitting me?
Yes.
That's kind of a, honestly, that's honestly kind of a weird take as far as I'm concerned. What do you think about
why?
That? Because like, that's, yeah, you throw it their best, like that's.
But you're going to be the guy who injures Manny Machado? I guess what he's saying is like, you're going to come at me, like, who are you?
That's true. But I just
I'm
mean that,
Manny
like,
Machado. I'm
right.
going to
Obviously,
Cooperstown.
Obviously, I agree with that. Right.
You don't deserve to sniff my cleats.
Right. He said, but it is what it is. Ain't no worry. We got the one we're supposed to support, but nothing was broken, so we're good. But the other thing he said, which I really love, is he says, quote, I guess I've matured a little bit in some way, shape, or form. If you catch me a couple years before, we'd still be out there.
Yep.
Thank you, Manny. Well said. And he's probably right.
This is a great example of you do dumb shit in your early 20s and then you mature and you recognize that it was stupid, but you can still point to it. Because every time a pitcher hits someone and there's this baseball posturing of, you won't fight me, like fight me, you won't, you're afraid. Manny Machado could be like, check my mixtape. I will throw hands. Yeah. I've graduated from that. Mm-hmm. I'm an adult now.
Mm-hmm. He's matriculated from hands throwing. Messes. No, I agree. And I love that. So I love that quote from him. And it's just, it was classic. But I agree. You're right. The first point is more of, right, who are you?
The Padres do need a fight, though. Like, but it's got to be Matt Batten or Matt Carpenter. Like, you can't risk Machado getting hurt.
Exactly. Which is good. That was good calculation. I'm proud of Manny. I'm very, very proud of him. Let's go to Detroit. This game got off to a strange start between the Angels and the Tigers because the power went out somewhere near and around Comerica Park, which meant that they didn't have the real broadcast for either team for the first like four innings of this game.
Huh.
At some point, they were like calling in and calling the game with the raw feed. It was all kinds of weird, wacky shit that you would not imagine would be possible in 2023, but there we were. Anyway, the game progresses. The Angels have a big lead late, and here comes Carlos Estevez to slam the door, and instead he said, Tigers, come on in. Spencer Torkelson comes. I mean, you know, Estevez slowly is blowing this game, and Jake has not seen this play yet. As, oh, you just watched it. Jake is already frowning. It's very sad. Don't worry. It has a happy ending. Jake, why don't you describe to us what happens when Spencer Torkelson comes up as the winning run with two guys on second and third, two outs, Angels clinging to a two-run lead, and Torkelson launches one to the deepest part of the park, dead center field. I will say, Carlos Estevez is quite fortunate that he was pitching in Comerica Park, because this is a home run, I believe, in probably every other stadium or almost every other stadium. Mickey Moniak drifts back and he's under it. What happened then?
So the issue here is Mickey Moniak turns his back to the ball and he's trying to do some sort of Willie Mays style catch. He realizes he's overrun the ball and he needs to contort his body back towards home plate to make the catch, which he does not. The ball falls to the turf and the game gets tied. Now, this is a tough play and a good reminder that Mickey Moniak is not a great center fielder. He's fine in a corner and he's been hitting better than anyone ever could have imagined or hoped, but he is not Mike Trout. He is.
But also, yeah, no, obviously that. But also, you know, he got there. I mean, that's why it looks worse. It's one of those things where there's some center fielders that aren't even going to get to that ball, but he does, and it bounced over the fence. They tie the game. But because baseball is the way that it is, of course, Mickey Mo comes up in the top of the 10th and redeems himself with a go-ahead RBI double, and the Angels win 7-6. Just a massive season saver. I mean, every Angels win at this point is a season saver. That's been true since opening day. But this could have been. I mean, it was really setting up for the moment that they punt, and instead here they are. What are they, 3.5 back, I believe, of a wild card spot as we sit here on Wednesday morning. And we don't think they're going to trade Ohtani, but we'll see what happens in the coming week.
They're not trading Ohtani. Mickey Moniak's OPS plus is still 161.
Amazing.
His OPS is still close to 1,000. 1,000. He has been the third most valuable player in the Angels by war. Again, I want to hammer this home to people. Open up Baseball Reference, the Angels page, and you will see Shohei Ohtani, the greatest player of all time, probably. Then next to him, you will see Mike Trout, the greatest player of the last 10 years. And then you will see Mickey Moniak, a former number one overall pick that we assumed was a bust, who was left to rot in AAA until injuries forced him up to the big leagues. And here he is, Ohtani, Trout, Moniak.
We love to see it. Mm. But, you know,
Neto,
you know who,
Ward.
You know who didn't need Mickey Moniak last night, Jake?
The Phillies.
The Phillies. Now, the Orioles hung on Monday for a big close win late. But on Tuesday night, the Phillies stormed back with some heroics from Bryce Harper, Bryson Stott, and Alec Boehm, getting the dub against Yennier Cano in the ninth after a dominant eighth from Fujinami. Oh, man, he looked good. He's just going to be alternating amazing and catastrophic outings for the rest of the season. But the Phillies come back, and that was big. But the moment that really captured people's attention was Bryce Harper's homer earlier in the game. And our good friend and former podcast guest, our former live podcast guest, not just any podcast guest, Kevin Brown, was on Orioles radio. And before Bryce Harper hit the home run, Kevin Brown was talking about Bryce Harper. And Kevin Brown was talking about how Bryce Harper just ain't what he used to be, Jake. He ain't what he used to be.
That's not really what he said.
I know.
Basically, he was saying that he's just not squaring the ball up the same way, which is true. I mean, Bryce Harper.
Not barreling the ball, that is fact.
He's just not over the last couple
months. Everything Kevin said was true. But sometimes you look goofy. Because sometimes Bryce Harper can hear you up in that visiting radio booth. And he can say, Kevin, what was that? What was that, Kevin? Kevin?
Doink.
Huh? What was that? And Kevin delivered perfectly. He was hardly salty about it. He said, on cue, Harper goes deep. And everyone laughing at Kevin Brown. I'm sure Kevin Brown is also laughing at Kevin Brown. And that is what makes Kevin Brown the best. And we love him so much. So I would love to see. I mean, listen, it's true. Bryce Harper. One of my favorite part of the call is that he says on cue, but then he says, for only his fifth homer of the season. He's like, no, but I'm still correct. And he was correct. But it was a very funny moment.
The Orioles not winning this game was really important for me. because I can't have them winning every close game, because that's just an exhausting existence as a fan. And I'm actually headed down to Philly this afternoon, and I didn't want the vibes in the Phillies clubhouse to be totally dead. So I was sneaky rooting for the Phils last night.
Oh, I see. I see. Yeah, no, I definitely know that feeling of like you're rooting before you go to the game. You want the team that you want to talk to win. No, I definitely have learned that. That's definitely become a regular experience for us. So that'll be interesting. That'll be cool to check in on the fighting Phils. They've certainly been looking better. Big win for them. And the Orioles can afford it because there are so many games over 500, and it's okay. It's okay. Could lose some close games here and there.
I am very confused by the Phillies, and this is what I'm going to try and figure out, because their good players in our mind have not been good. Here we go, Jordan. Can you name their top five players by WAR on BREF? Give it a shot for the Phillies.
All right. See, BREF still loves innings, so I think it could still be something like that. But I'm going to go Marsh. I'm not in any order. Marsh, yep. Stott.
Yes, Stott is one. Marsh is four.
Okay. Then I think who's still going to be up there? Yeah, I can't. Could it still be Real Muto? I don't think so.
Yes, Real Muto. Yes.
Yes, Real Muto. And I'm still going to say Wheeler.
Wheeler is five. Who's two?
Who is two? Who is two on the Phillies? I don't know. Who is it?
Taiwan Walker.
Okay, I would not have gotten that.
Not up there, Bryce Harper, Nick Castellanos. Yep. But that's just because his defense is iffy and he's cooled off a lot recently. Trey Turner.
Obviously, Schwarber has no
obviously defense. Schwarber. So, and Real Muto has just
been
squarely
average.
Given
up too many home runs.
Correct. And so the Phillies are good this year because Stott and Marsh and Castellanos for the first half have been great. And not because Schwarber, Turner, and Harper and Real Muto have been great. Very weird. It's a very odd situation.
Yeah. This is a flawed team, but I still think they're pretty good. So they're kind of right where I expected them to be in some senses. Not in the way that I thought. I mean, listen, man, Trey Turner, I don't know what is going to have to happen there. I don't know what to expect from him at this point, but it's not pretty. Not pretty.
Christopher Sanchez.
Yeah.
Has been amazing for them in the rotation. MVP. The real MVP.
The other thing about Turner is like he's batting second every game. I'm not saying they should change that, but like they've left offensive production on the table because he has been terrible, right? And batting first or second the entire season.
So he also hasn't been so bad that they can pull a Manoa and phantom IL him and send him to the complex to figure things out. But he has a 681 OPS, right? So it's like, what do you do here? And it's
that's
just so
terrible.
Disappointing.
He's making $30 million. I mean, he's not. Yes, he's still. And obviously, when he's also making defensive errors, you know, that's a whole other issue. I'm not saying send him to the complex. I just might want to bat him sixth or seventh for a week. Like, that's kind of where I'm at with that. But like, as we know, if we know anything about Rob Thompson, like he's going to play it straight no matter what.
Correct.
And that has generally been a good thing. But that's just something to consider when you think about, okay, well, why haven't the Phillies been even better? It's because they have a 681 OPS guy. Like most teams, I guess that's the basic way to put it. I can't think of anyone else who would have a 681 OPS that would be batting first or second the entire season, no matter what. Like it'd be hard to find that an example of that, right?
Yep.
So
yep.
I understand it. I still hope that they can get him going and you want him to see more pitches and hopefully find it. I don't think he's cooked. But that's what is unique about the Trey Turner situation as it stands now. But if he doesn't figure it out this year, he's got next year. He's got the year after that. He's got the year after that. He's got the year after that.
Oh, okay.
Year after that. Yeah. Okay.
Anyway. Lot of time. All right. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to do some emails. We're going to pop open the mailbag, answer some of your questions, and have a good time. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast, a beautiful Wednesday edition of this fine show. We're going to break open the mailbag and answer some of your questions. Jordan, where can folks email us?
You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. Hopefully you know how to spell baseball. We have 5 emails this week. 5. We have more than that, but we're going to read 5, which is maybe the most we've done. Where would you like to begin? A lot of fun ones here. Let's start with Greg. Start with Greg here. This is a couple weeks old, but it made us laugh, so we're going to read it. Greg said, with the draft just having passed, I have a related question to pose. How many rounds would the MLB draft need to be for you to get selected? You can think about this in the context of your current self or your most recent baseball playing peak. For me, it would probably need to be tens of thousands of rounds before I hear my name called. I love that Greg includes that because we know nothing about Greg, and he just gives us that line to finish the email. For me, it would probably need to be tens of thousands of rounds before I would need to hear my name called.
And what's great is that Greg could be a former Division III player.
Yeah.
Or never picked up a glove in his life.
Exactly. And it's like, which I'm wondering that because in his email, he says, like, you can refer to like your most recent baseball playing peak, which now I'm curious about Greg's most recent baseball playing peak. Anyway, right. He's asking us. The question is, tens of thousands for Jake? No. Tens of thousands for me? Probably. Yes. Although it's hard to even wrap my mind around how many picks that actually is. I know we could do the math. But like, there's a big difference between 1,000 rounds and 10,000 rounds. And so I just am trying to kind of like do some of the math in my head. But like, let's go peak Jake Mintz senior year. You're getting outs like crazy. No one can touch you in the central region. Like, what? Yeah. Let's just talk about that hypothetical because, you know, NARPs like me, like, obviously it's taking forever. And obviously, there's all kinds of other things that the fact that the minors have been shrunk to the point where there's not enough roster spots, blah, 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 blah. But on
I just love the idea. All right, let's head on to the 23rd, 1,000th round. Pirates, you're on the clock.
Pirates are on the clock.
And then Ben Charrington, Ben Charrington, like they're in the room. He's like, all right, let's take a look at the big board. All right, we got Greg. We like Greg here.
I don't know if Greg's from New Hampshire.
Greg, we like Greg here, or do you want to take Jordan Schusterman?
Yeah. Looks like Jordan was pretty good when he was 11 playing rec league.
And he's going to sign for slot. Ways. He'll sign for slot.
He will sign for slot, which at this point is probably reverse. You probably pay to play. I love that you think Ben Charrington's still in the draft room in the 23rd, 1,000th round.
It's a grinder.
Pirates select draft ID. I mean, think about how many numbers you would be saying for the draft IDs. I mean, it's already like 7 or 8 digits.
Incredible.
Okay, Jake. Let's talk about peak Jake Mintz.
Yeah. I'm just going to read the numbers out quickly. 31 innings pitched senior year, Jordan, with an ERA of 0.87. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, I had one of the best ground ball rates in Division III baseball. Side armor, 81 to 83. I mean, you get me in a 81, 82. You get me in a pro system, that number could tick up 83, 84. Who knows?
So I actually think that probably between 500 and 700 rounds. It might be less than that. Because remember, 40-round draft, you obviously didn't get a sniff. And you went to try to play indie ball and sucked. So like... Yeah. Once you consider all that, and we know that only 5 or so, like think about it this way, right? Only between 1 and 4 D3 pitchers, players get picked in an average 40-round draft. So how many do we need to go to get to you? You're probably like the 100th D3 person taken.
No.
Maybe even lower. So
I think I go in a 200 round draft. I think I go in a 200 round draft. Just let me finish.
Yeah.
Not on the base of my abilities completely. I think once you get into the 200th round, a team or someone we know in a front office would say, I got a guy with a great ground ball rate in D3.
Yeah.
He's the Cespedes Family Barbecue guy. It would be funny if we take him. Because at the 200th round, again, we're talking about thousands of rounds, but these guys are getting, the draft rooms are getting bored at round 20 already.
Right.
Like, imagine, I just think I go, if I am on a talent level, the 103rd best D3 pitcher available, I think I'm going way higher than that because of the tweets.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. That's a different factor. I mean, it's true.
It plays
I think
into
if we're
it.
Just answering the question, I think you're right. Because, right, a 200-round draft has over 6,000 picks. Are you one of the 6,000 best players available? No shot. But when you consider signability, if you basically cross out all the high schoolers who are not going to sign and all the other guys, maybe we get to you. So I think with the ground ball rate, with the funk, like I think if you would put up the same numbers throwing normally, we're going another 100 rounds.
Right. Like, but if I put those numbers up in D1,
yes.
Or if I put those numbers up for 4 years instead of one.
Yeah, well, if you put those numbers up in D1, I mean, you might have been in a regular 31st rounder, you know.
Yeah.
For 4 years, yeah. So,
Great question, Greg.
Great question, Greg. We could go on forever, but we're going to move on to our next one. Hopefully that satisfied you. Go ahead.
This is from Kevin. Kevin says, big new theory of why the Yankees suck. And the email says, this is all it says, no question. The email says, no facial hair. It's like requiring everyone to be circumcised. It's ridiculous. Jordan, thoughts?
Great, not a question. Great email. I am curious if this is coming from a Yankees fan or not. So I would love to know this. But as for the analogy or comparison here,
you're talking to the wrong guys. I mean, you're talking to two Jews here. You know,
So, like, I mean, listen, like, you're not about to hear some anti-Brit Milah content on the
I mean, if you don't want to circumcise your kids, like, that's your call.
Yeah,
I guess that's the point.
Like,
that's the point being made here, right? Is if you want to be clean shaven, that's your call.
But here's the other thing. No, it's not. It's not like that.
It's just like that.
It's saying it's no facial. I mean, I sort of know what they're getting at, but like, no, it's what it is not allowing them to wear facial hair, which is ridiculous on its own.
Yeah.
We don't even have to go into make these goofy comparisons.
We don't have
you
to don't bring foreskin
to,
into the conversation.
You don't need to make a point about circumcision for me to think that the Yankees facial hair policy is outdated and weird.
How would the Yankees facial hair policy end? How do we think? In 100 years it still exists?
The only way it ends is ownership changes. That's the only way it's going to end. I don't even think. I think it's kind of that simple. I think it would really be as simple as. I know this is like a ridiculous comparison, but like ownership changes can change things so fast in so many ways. And you see this, of course, whatever you say, oh, Steve Cohen, now he spends all this money. But like, I'm thinking about like Dan Snyder, who is now finally out in Washington. Or you think about some of the other NBA owners, like that is a thing that clearly is going back to the Steinbrenners. And I think that's what it takes. Now you could say, well, the Steinbrenners are never not going to own the Yankees. And you could say, okay, that's true. And that's why it's never going to change. But that's, I think, the only answer. I don't
here's
see
how,
it changing under, yeah.
Here's how the Yankees facial hair situation changes. Mm-hmm. They need a Sikh superstar.
Mm.
So Sikhs.
That they
the
can't
religion,
resist.
The Sikhism, you're not allowed to cut hair from your body, I believe. And so as a result, many Sikh men have very long beards. Mm-hmm. If Aaron Judge converts, I guess.
No, but yeah.
Or you have, you know, like a good player is Sikh and there's a religious situation where they cannot cut the beard. The Yankees cannot tell player X to cut the beard because that's illegal in that context. Mm-hmm. And so then if they have a beard, then all the other players will start growing one too. That's another option for how.
That's another option. Is that scenario more or less likely than the Steinbrenners not owning the Yankees? That is an interesting question.
I would take the Sikhs. Yeah. Well, just quickly. So, you know, in the Marines and in the military, you're not supposed to have facial hair. And there was a case about this where a court ruled that the Marine Corps cannot force Sikh men to shave their beards. And so if the Marines, were like, keep the beards, then the Yankees have to let people have beards. That's all I'm saying.
Let's move on to an email from Seth. Seth says, hi, Jake and Jordan. Hi, Seth. Love the pod. Hi, all the content you guys have done across all platforms, keeping baseball fun and informative from MLB to NCAA. That's us. My question is regarding Bryce Harper and his jumping catch into the camera, well when he was playing first base. First, if you were the manager, would you flip out on him for being so aggressive his first time at the position? I'm all for my players being dogs and trying to get every out, but would be very concerned that he's diving like that and using his arms as protection when coming off such an injury. My next question is, what are your thoughts on him wearing regular snapback hats while warming up and taking IO? Obviously, to each their own. But would he buy another hat? Is he asking why? Why would he buy another hat, which I'm sure is just pennies to him, when he's got free team-issued hats in his own locker? Love all the content. Keep on rocking, Seth. Interesting question. I like both these questions. The first one is... No, if Bryce Harper's on my team, I kind of know what the deal is. And also, like, you're still, it is funny. Like, the funniest part about that play, which we didn't talk about at the time, is, like, in theory, like, first base, you are less likely to get injured than playing in the outfield, except clearly not. I'd be more worried about, like, collisions at first than diving into the camera well. But what are we going to tell Bryce? You're not going to tell Bryce Harper to suddenly change. So
you put Bryce Harper in the field
for this long. Yeah.
Yeah. You're expecting this kind of thing. And if he wasn't healthy enough to do this, they wouldn't put him out there. There is certainly a moment in that first game where he's going over there and you're like, but he's fine.
That's fine. He's not thinking that. I promise you.
The second question, and I've noticed this snapback thing. It's interesting. He's got like the hats that just say Phillies.
Yeah,
on the front.
He's got a few of them. I mean, he's done it with wearing Eagles hats. He's done it like,
right.
He is seems to be a big Mitchell and Ness guy.
Correct. My thought there is that he doesn't want to get his game hat sweaty.
Ooh. Especially with his hair.
Yeah.
It's probably especially.
I can ask today. One. You want to ask today? I'll ask today.
Please.
When I'm in the clubhouse.
Yes. Yes. That's great. The other thing is, saying where he's like, why would he buy another hat? Bryce Harper, like, when you're Bryce Harper, shit, like, this is another thing you realize when you're in Major League Clubhouse all the time. Guys, just stuff just arrives at their lockers. They're not necessarily buying anything. Like, stuff just shows up. And when you're Bryce Harper, there's all kinds of new gear just apparating in your locker or your second locker or your third locker because you're Bryce Harper. All the time. So
right.
Maybe he walked into Lids and bought that. I doubt it.
There's so much stuff showing up. The other day I was in the Mets clubhouse and in Justin Verlander's extra locker, there was a brand new gifted bottle of whiskey next to a brand new gifted bottle of olive oil. And I was like, that's an interesting cocktail.
I remember like the guy in the Reds clubhouse who's just constantly getting stuff is predictably Hunter Green. Like, he's just got brand new golf clubs are just appearing. And then here's this, you know, he's got like, I've seen, I don't know who it was, if it was there or maybe it was last year, just like, obviously they all have regular chairs that are just comfy chairs. But sometimes there's just like another chair that's even more comfy that just like appears. And just like, that's just, you're a big leaguer. Stuff's just given to you all the time.
There is a mountain of Japanese candy chews the size of an oven, like a big oven in your home, like in Kodai Senga's extra locker.
Oh, yeah.
It is enormous. It is more candy than any person could eat over the course of the season.
Yeah.
He must have gotten it as part of some sponsorship deal.
And that's the thing. I've always, you know, it's some of the first things you know when you go into a clubhouse for the first time. It's like, okay, who's got the second locker? But really, that's what it's about. It's not that the guys are like, most of the time, it's not like the star players are demanding more space for themselves.
They have more shit.
They're barely even in there. Like, most of the best players are not hanging out at their locker ever anyway, right? And so the guys who need the more room are the relievers who are sitting in front of their locker 95% of the time. Like, those are the guys that actually need more space. But it's really for all of the stuff they are repetitively gifted. All right, Jake. Two more emails. This one comes from Spencer. I love this question. Something I feel like we've maybe talked about. Spencer says, hey guys, love the show. You guys have scratched my itch for goofy baseball content. Glad we could scratch you, Spencer. That's weird. Along those lines, Do y'all feel any link to players with the same names as yourself as a Braves fan named Spencer? Spencer Strider has fulfilled me. Jake, how do you feel about Jake versus Jacob? Jordan Schusterman, do you appreciate Braves pitcher Jared Schuster, or is he like a bad caricature of your own name? Here's to the continued progress of Mr. Torkelson. Shouts out to Torque. Spencer, love this question. Let me address Jared Schuster first. In some ways, yes, he's a bad caricature because when people forget my name, they often think it's Jared. However, I fully endorse the spelling of Jared Schuster's name because one of the worst things about my name is that people just decide to put a C in it. Doesn't matter if it's in my email and you can see it right there. They may have gotten it correct earlier in the email. People put a C in my name all the time. It is my entire life existence. And so anyone that has the name Schuster, like, I need him to succeed as much as possible to normalize that spelling of S-H-U-S. Like, that is so important to me. I know, like, the greatest curling player of all time, John Schuster, is also this way. So I always, you know, cheer for him in the Olympics. I just need this name and this spelling of the S-H just out there. So I'm always rooting for him for sure. So that's my answer there. What about you with, are there any, Jakes and Jacobs? Like, there's definitely more Jakes than Jordans in baseball, though. I guess it's probably pretty comparable. So do you have any feeling on that?
Jacob DeGrom dropping Jake.
Very early.
A real gut punch to the community.
Yeah.
And he has been ostracized from the Jake world. You know, to be a Jake and not a Jacob is a choice, right? Yeah. You have an adult name, a traditional business name, Jacob, biblical, OT, First Testament, sitting right there in your pocket for use at any
time. First Testament, that's right. That's what they call it.
Okay. Old world, Jacob, two syllables. And Yuck to be Cove. A Jake, to be a Jake is to embrace your inner child, is to remain young in the face of all that is bad in the world, and to leave Jake behind, to go from Jake to Jacob, is cowardice. And for that reason, Jacob DeGrom, you're done. You're out.
Especially at that age. Why would you make that? It's one thing, like, if you pivot to Jacob at some point when you're older, that's fine, right? At some point, you might look more like a Jacob than a Jake, right? Sure. But yeah, to just to toss it out, you know, after his rookie year, I feel like you can't go back now. Like, don't come crawling back to the Jakes. Mm-mm. Like, it's over. You gave that up.
Yeah. So that's a tough one. But you know, we got Jake McGee, Jake Mariznick, Jake Diekman, Jake Lamb, Jake Odorizzi, Jake Arrieta, Jake Peavy. Jake Peavy's great. Jake Peavy was big for Jake visibility.
That's a big one.
You know, growing up for me, if you can't see it, you can't be it. You know, and Jake Peavy was a real inspiration to little white Jakes out there.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, is that who we've had? This has been a big year for Jordans. I got to say, I think that we actually might be having, like, Jordan Walker and Jordan Westberg are, that's a pretty strong next generation here of Jordans, where it's, you know, it's been a lot of pitchers, you know, Jordan Lyles, of course. Obviously, you know, Jordan Romano has been pretty good. Jordan Luplo. It's been a lot of those where you're like, okay, we got something, but like a superstar is not something, especially on the offensive side. I would love to see more of that. So I'm excited about Westberg and Walker. That's a big addition.
I agree with you. It is great to have a player with your same name, especially if you have an odd last name. There is one Mintz ever to pitch in the big league, Steve Mintz. And growing up, he was my guy. I mean, I never saw him throw because it was before I was born, but I remember learning that there had been a Mintz. And that was awesome. Never been a Schusterman.
No, but that's why I got a root for Jared Schuster. It's the closest I am going to get. All right, we have one final email before we say goodbye. And this is something we acknowledged on Monday. But this comes from Joanna. And Joanna was at the A's Giants game last night, which normally would not feel like that big of a deal. But if you saw what was going on, This was a big deal. Joanna says, hey guys, Giants fan here. I went to the A's Giants game at Oracle tonight, and it was incredible. So many people were wearing Sal shirts, and lots of fans had both A's and Giants stuff on. Usually when you see people in orange and black and green and gold, it feels like a crime, but tonight it made me smile. I brought a sign. See, attached, the sign says, Giants fans say, keep the A's in the Bay. Hashtag Woo! Sell the team. Excellent sign. Chanted with everyone throughout the game. In the fifth inning, when the sell the team chant completely took over the stadium, I felt so proud to be from the Bay Area. It was such an amazing moment to feel the camaraderie between all the fans, and I was so glad to be a part of it. If the A's really do leave, it will be such a loss for the entire Bay Area, and it won't be as fun without them. Keep up the great work. I appreciate you. Joanna, we appreciate you, Joanna. Great work with the sign and supporting the A's fans. This was really cool. This was really cool. And I think that, again, like, I'm glad they could all acknowledge that. Like, I'm not surprised, right? These are all smart fans, but it was cool to see them come together and kind of exhibit that kind of, as you mentioned, camaraderie, but also support and solidarity with the fan base. That we do want those together, right? That is an obvious thing. So whether it is the current version of the franchise or a future version, I do hope that there is baseball in Oakland for the sake of San Francisco.
And older Giants fans remember in the early 90s where the Giants were going to leave to go to Tampa Bay.
Yep.
People forget about this now. And it feels like the Giants are so rooted.
Oh, yeah.
Rooted. In San Francisco. Yeah. Hashtag rooted. That it feels like a world away, but they were close to leaving. Yeah. And so, unlike other franchises, Giants fans know that feeling. Older Giants fans know that feeling of the idea of having your team ripped away from you unceremoniously. And so I'm sure there's a level of empathy involved there. And then just, you know, people in the East Bay, man, they know how to organize. They know how to do community organization.
That's no doubt about that. So it was cool to see that carry over and have that moment last night. And yeah, I mean, it's still, I don't even know what the current status is and then that whole process, but obviously they haven't made too much progress yet because this is still dominating the news, as it should, because these fans deserve to be heard. Thank you to everyone who emailed us. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. We'll keep those coming. Friday, hoping to have a special guest to talk about one specific team for the trade deadline. I won't spoil that quite yet, but looking forward to that for sure. I have a feeling, Jake Mintz, that we will have another trade or two to talk about on Friday before everything really heats up over the weekend ahead of next week's deadline. As Bob Nightingale said, next week, the moment of truth will be here. But thank you, Jake, for doing this podcast with me. Thank you, Chris Tyler, for producing as always. Thank you to everyone who listened. If you enjoyed, leave a rating or review on your podcast site of choice. Until Friday, enjoy the ball, and thank you for listening. Goodbye.
SiriusXM Podcasts.